To his irritation, Erica Van Sloan had observed the silent exchange and smiled wryly.
"There are many of her kind serving in High River, Kane. You know they can never forget anything. And I have a few memories of my own that have never grown stale with the passage of time."
The lift disc upon which they stood shot upward. In less than half a minute, the disc hissed to a pneumatic stop and the door opened automatically. Erica and Kane strode quickly down the ramp and onto the uppermost level of the monolith. It had once served as Baron Cobalt's suite, the Olympian seat from which all strings of power in the Ville extended. The foyer was as magnificent as Kane remembered it. Glittering light cast from many crystal chandeliers flooded every corner of the entrance hall. At the far end of the foyer loomed huge ivory and gold inlaid double doors. They were open, and the two people strode through them. Kane recalled how, on his first visit to the level, on the night he was inducted into the Trust, only a deep primal dark lay on the far side of the doors. At one time, the Baron's level was the only one in the monolith without windows, but the deficit had been remedied since Cobaltville became High River. Round portals containing beautiful stained glass illuminated almost every wall in every room, giving it a cathedral-like feel. Erica and Kane trod on colorful disks of light cast by the sunlight flooding the tower. One room led to another through a wide, low arch. Another room lay beyond, and another, all illuminated by the lovely, multi-hued circles of light. In the fifth and final room, Kane and Erica Van Sloan stopped. Kane barely managed to keep the surprise he felt from showing on his face. A shaft of sunshine from a skylight fell onto three people in the center of the chamber. A young, slender man wearing a white turban and Sindri faced each other over a chessboard, with Tanvira looking on disinterestedly.
"Here we are."
The man in the turban sat straight up in his chair. When he turned his unlined, clean-shaven face toward them and grinned, Kane was too stunned to do more than gape in open-mouthed silence.
"Friend Kane!"
The man's voice was vibrant with the strength of youth, its sing-song cadence familiar.
"Oh, my dear friend!"
The turbaned man pushed his chair back from the chessboard and crossed the room in a rush, catching Kane up in a crushing embrace. If not for the fact of the man's blue eyes, startlingly bright in the deep olive of his face, Kane would not have believed him to be Mohandas Lakesh Singh. The last time he had seen the man, some 23 years before, he had looked to be in early middle age, a few years older than Kane himself. The temples of his thick jet-black hair had held some gray threads, and his complexion had shown a few creases from either age or stress. He certainly had a stockpile of both. But now, he could have passed for a man in his early 20s, more like Tanvira's contemporary than her father. It was almost as if Erica had aged in direct proportion to the years Lakesh had shed, in the time since Kane had last seen them both. As Lakesh hugged him, crooning endearments in Hindi, Kane caught Sindri's eye. The little man still wore his shadow suit. Surreptitiously, he pointed to Lakesh, then placed his index finger against his temple and inscribed a counterclockwise circle, the immemorial sign of mental derangement. Carefully, Kane disengaged himself from Lakesh, patting his shoulder. The man seemed sincerely overjoyed to see him, if the tears glimmering in his eyes were any indication. They rolled down his cheeks as he clutched at Kane's arms, as if to assure himself the man was indeed real.
"It's all right, old man. It's really me."
"Unfortunately. Get away from the general, Dad."
Sindri's eyes widened in mock astonishment.
"General? General of what? Confusion?"
Kane ignored both Sindri and Tanvira. She wore a duplicate of Erica's black and red ensemble, but with a plunging neckline. It revealed not only a goodly amount of cleavage, but also a silver medallion in the shape of a scorpion. Her hair was coiffed and glossy, but the look she directed toward Kane was pure venom.
"Scorpia Prime, I presume. Is the title a generational thing? Or is it only a masquerade when it suits the Imperator? Or is it a matter of what silly slut fits the crown, rather than the other way around?"
Tanvira merely smiled at him enigmatically. She toyed idly with the data cards in her hands, shuffling them back and forth between her fingers. Kane stared at her stolidly, and she stared back, beautiful, formidable, and dangerous. He realized she hated him, not so much because he had tricked her, but because he had rejected her. And, like Kali, like Shakti, Her pride demanded a redress. He had ruined any possible chance of winning her over as either a friend, lover, or ally. Tanvira's melted chocolate eyes seethed with a challenge, silently daring him to reclaim the cards in her hands. He knew that in order to take them from her, he would have to kill her outright. Kane forced a lazy smile to his lips.
What are we doing up here, Lakesh? Is it recreation hour?
Lakesh beamed in delight.
Making you one of us!
Kane matched the wide grin with a goofy one of his own.
Over my stinky corpse, old man.
The grin on Lakesh's face faltered, and he gazed into Kane's eyes as if trying to ascertain his degree of sincerity.
I told him those would be your sentiments, but it doesn't really matter. The issue of your death or life is no longer up to you. It's up to Sam.
Lakesh turned away and returned to the chessboard as if he had forgotten all about Kane.
Prince Indri, I'll have you checkmated in 2 more moves. I told you and told you. The game is over. I beat you 30 minutes ago.
Kane shot a quizzical glance at Erica.
The nanites can regenerate fresh brain tissue, but sometimes you lose skills and short-term memories. If a unique neural pattern was truly obliterated, then cell repair machines could no more restore them than art conservators could restore a burned tapestry from its ash.
So physically, Lakesh is younger, but mentally, he's senile?
Tanvira came to her father's defense.
Certain tasks are beyond the abilities of nanomachines or the squid implants. Maintaining mental health is almost impossible if the cause isn't biochemical or neurological. If the mental impairment is due to extensive emotional or mental stress...
She lifted a shoulder in a shrug, her breasts rippling in the deep V of her tunic.
A machine might be able to repair a computer's hardware, while neither understanding nor changing its software.
The question begs to be asked, then. Why bother improving his hardware, returning him to the physical condition of a youth, while allowing his software to completely degenerate?
Kane stroked his beard.
Very good question. Why start shaving years off my hardware when my software won't feel anything approximating gratitude?
Erica shook her head sadly.
It's not gratitude the Imperator wants. He wants you to be in good health for the ordeal yet to come.
Kane felt a chill hand stroke the buttons of his spine.
What kind of ordeal?
Tanvira eased around the table where Lakesh and Sindri sat, provocatively clicking the cards together, setting up an unnerving castanet-like rhythm.
Sam wants to know your plans regarding a space and time penetration.
He could always ask.
Tanvira smiled at him lazily.
He intends to. His way.
When you were recuperating from the squid implant surgery, did you dream?
Kane glanced toward Erica, startled.
As a matter of fact, I did. Rather vividly.
Did you experience visions of stars, of galaxies?
Kane's brow furrowed, and reflexively his hand went to touch the back of his head. He checked the movement.
If I did, is that significant?
Tanvira nodded.
It is indeed. That means your neuronic energy is now linked to Sam. You are part of the great plan, whether you like it or not.
What the hell is that?
Kane received no response. He glared first at Tanvira, then at Erica, and finally back to Lakesh. The man sat staring at the chessboard, chin supported by a hand, poking at the pieces, pushing a pawn to one square and a rook to another.
Lakesh!
The turbaned man didn't glance at him.
Lakesh! I'm talking to you, old man!
Lakesh swiveled his head toward him, blinking his blue eyes as if he had just been awakened from a nap.
Friend Kane! Is that you?
Yes, it's me. Lakesh, tell me about the great plan.
Lakesh smiled impishly.
I'm the only one who figured it out. For a long time, I thought the Imperator was just another false messiah working to make ancient prophecies about the end of time come true.
Sindri frowned.
And he's not? Oh, no! He's actually doing it!
Kane moved closer.
How?
Lakesh's smile widened, then it froze on his face.
He's building a window that will reach into the past or the future and inject matter into the present or place it throughout the Chronon stream, whenever and wherever he wants.
What kind of matter?
Lakesh pinched the air between thumb and forefinger.
He will start small, targeting nations united in mutual dependency, then move on to those that are self-sufficient. The nations of the past that are barriers to unity, he'll break the barriers by the introduction of plague.
Plague?
A mutated virus. It will decimate population centers and empires, monarchies and democracies. Didn't like the outcome of World War II? Well, what difference would it make to an America laid low by an incurable and virulently toxic pathogen? Unhappy about how Emperor Constantine converted to Christianity? Hey presto, one sprinkle of virus and you'll have a super pagan Roman emperor coming in to take his place.
Killing off half the planet with a plague virus doesn't seem a very effective way to implement unity.
Lakesh's mouth was creased in a smile, but his eyes shone with tears.
Think about it, friend Kane. The survivors will be struck down by an enervating weakness. Resentments and jealousies between nations that were once allies will be exacerbated, since none of them can extend aid to the other. They will look for a savior, and one will be there with his nanotechnology treatments.
Sam?
Lakesh nodded.
By the time Sam is done, he will not only have everyone in this time period neuronically linked by the squids, he'll have accomplished it throughout the past. Everyone who was ever born, or whoever will be born, will be his servant. No one will know it, because after the temporal manipulation ripples fade, the whole of humanity's history will have always and ever been determined by Sam.
Sindri stared at Lakesh in goggle-eyed shock. The man met that stare with a sweet smile, then returned his attention to the chessboard. Tanvira continued to click the data cards together in her hands. Finally, Sindri turned to Kane.
I can only think of three things to say. Oh my God.
Lakesh made a swift but elaborate motion over the chessboard. With a flourish like a conjurer, he placed a white knight on a center black square and favored Kane with a sly smile. The moon floated within a silvery aura behind the top of the vast pyramid, its glow varnishing the beautiful snow-covered valley below. A keen cold wind raised swirls of snow up toward the star-speckled night sky. Kane had never forgotten his first sight of the Shan Pyramid nearly three decades before. It was as vivid in his memory now as if he were seeing it for the first time. He, Sindri, and Tanvira stood shivering at its base. They could only see a small portion of its staggering proportions. The gargantuan structure was composed of countless fitted blocks of stone, the top quarried perfectly flat. Moonlight played along its painted facade, lending an air of otherworldly majesty to the huge monolith. Even in the uncertain light, they could see how the immense structure was painted black on the north side, blue-gray on the east, red on the south, and white on the west. In pre-dark days, archaeologists had theorized the Great Pyramid of China was part of the tomb complex of Emperor Shir Hunang Ti. The purpose of the pyramid or tomb was never known, though Taoist tradition attributed its construction to a very powerful race called the Celestials, which Kane had assumed to be Balaam's people, the first folk. Whoever was responsible for its building, one thing was certain. The Pyramid of Shan was a cardinal point in the world grid harmonics, a network of pyramids built at key places around the world to tap Earth's natural geomantic energies. Sindri eyed the immense structure.
I've seen bigger.
Kane knew he was referring to the mile-high pyramid on Mars, and so didn't dispute him. Tanvira looked to be on the verge of it when an armed sentry appeared from the square-cut doorway. He was a small Asiatic man in the black and red uniform of the CCS, wielding an old-fashioned SIG AMT auto rifle. A black truncheon was attached to his belt. Two small metal prongs gleamed at its tip, and Kane guessed the instrument was a smaller version of the shock sticks once used by the magistrate divisions.
The Impalator wishes you to join him.
The man stepped aside with a deferential nod as Tanvira swept past him into the pyramid. Kane and Sindri followed her, aware of the trooper bringing up the rear. She stalked purposefully down the passageway, taking long-legged strides, adopting a hip-swinging swagger. Her self-confidence reminded Kane of Erica's former arrogance, but he didn't feel impressed, only saddened. Less than 30 minutes ago at High River, Erica had informed Kane that Sam wished to see him, Sindri, and Tanvira in Shan immediately. Tanvira had led the two men to the gateway unit on level A of the administrative monolith. They hadn't been given a choice. But right before they entered the jump chamber, Erica slipped the compact disc into Kane's palm and brushed her lips lightly over his cheek.
Good luck. And I hope this makes up for some of the things I've done to you and caused to be done.
Sindri tugged at Kane's sleeve, indicating he should slow down.
Why are we doing this again? We could have just taken the data cards from that snooty bitch and escaped.
Taken them from her, maybe. But I probably would have had to kill her.
No great loss.
Kane let the comment pass.
But we wouldn't have been able to escape. The gateway in the monolith is a direct unit-to-unit lock, from there to here.
Now that we are here...
Shut up, you sawed-off bit of nothing! We'll soon be with the Imperator, and if you don't show respect to him, none will be shown to you.
Sindri glared at her, but decided the threat implicit in her words was enough to prevent him from responding with an insult of his own. The passageway subtly changed. The floor became smoother, and the square-cut blocks of stone on the walls gave way to smooth, seamless expanses. They glittered dully with innumerable flecks of all colors, providing a soft light. The ceiling rounded overhead like an arch, winding gently in an ever-widening curve. The floor, gleaming like oiled slate, gave a solid footing. The corridor opened onto a railed balcony that ran around a vast circular chamber more than 200 feet across. All around the balcony were arrayed consoles, conduits, displays, switchboards, and computer terminals. In the center of the chamber, some 50 feet below, lay what appeared to be a pit or a pool. Kane couldn't be sure what lay in the pool, but he knew what was supposed to.
The heart of the earth.
A soft voice reached him from a set of control consoles.
Not exactly. I've expanded it since you were last here. It might be more accurate to call it the heart of creation.
A tall figure in a white linen suit stepped out into the light. Kane hadn't seen Sam in many years, and even though he had changed in the interim, he still didn't look right. He was tall and thin, and his hollowed-out cheeks stressed his high, jutting cheekbones. He had no facial hair to speak of, not even eyebrows. A white turban covered the top and sides of his head, and light glinted from the blue diamond brooch pinned at the turban's forefront. The slight slant of his golden eyes beneath prominent supraorbital ridges gave his pale, narrow face a slightly feline cast. As always, his hands were his strangest physical attribute, inhumanly long and slender, but the backs and palms were crackled and crisscrossed with a network of deep lines, like those of a very old man. Glistening between the exceedingly long fingers was a faint pattern of what appeared to be scales. Judging by his smooth, unlined face, Sam looked to be no more than 20. Tanvira ducked her head and handed the data cards to Sam, who took them with a detachment bordering on disinterest.
Kane.
Sam's eyes flicked over Sindri.
And guest. When Tanvira conveyed to me the use to which you put the spatiotemporal dissociator, I must admit to being astounded. Out of all the possible combinations that I assessed you might attempt with the device, the possibility of pulling a subject from zero time completely eluded me.
Thanks.
Sindri hooked his thumb toward Kane.
But it was his idea, so blame him, not me.
Sam's mouth turned down at the corners.
I had no intention of complimenting or blaming you.
Whatever. But you sure look sad about something, your imperialness.
Sam tapped the edges of the data cards against his chin.
Stop needling me, short pants.
Kane, Tanvira, and Sindri all reacted with various degrees of surprise at Sam's sudden lapse from formality. His posture even became more relaxed.
Of course I'm sad. For all intents and purposes, you ceased to exist today, Sindri.
Kane tried to fix the position of the guard out of the corners of his eyes, but he was unable to locate him. He resisted the impulse to turn and look, fearing that would tip off Sam and Tanvira as to what was flitting through his mind.
Great. Thanks a lot, Kane. You pull me out of my nice, comfortable zero time just so this hat-challenged asshole can kill me.
Sam looked disturbed, even vaguely insulted.
Kill you? Not at all. True, your blood, skin, and bone will be removed and reduced to their basic constituent elements, but your brain will remain. I'll make use of its electromagnetic energy. It's all a matter of maximizing potential.
He waved extravagantly to the machines and the pool below the walkway.
Just as I've done here.
Kane carefully walked toward the railing.
I thought your heart of the world was a nexus point, a convergence of geomantic energy.
He looked down over the rail and instantly slapped his hands around the metal bar as a surge of vertigo assailed him.
That's exactly what it is. Spirit of the Earth Mother, the Gaia Force. Or, if you care to be more scientific, it is the essential building block of the universe, the primal monoblock of creation.
Kane pushed himself away, turning toward Sam. Sindri and Tanvira stared at him in puzzlement.
My God, Sam. What have you done?
Sam smiled almost shyly.
The universe was formed by an explosion of gases, plasma, and matter known as the Big Bang. A collection of those proto-energies exists here, in a temporal pocket, a ripple in the quantum field. All I did was expand the ripple.
Tanvira and Sindri eyed him curiously, and then joined Kane at the railing of the balcony.
The heart contains the energies released in the first picoseconds following the Big Bang, channeling the matrix of protoparticles that swirled through the universe before physical relativistic laws fully stabilized. It exists slightly out of phase with this dimension, with our space-time.
Kane, Sindri, and Tanvira looked down and felt as if invisible forces were tugging at them, as though waves of energy flowed around their bodies. And for what felt like hours, they simply stared, their minds numb with amazement, shocked into silent paralysis. They were looking into what seemed like outer space itself. They looked down and outward, and what they saw was a sphere of dense black dotted with brilliantly gleaming pinpoints of intense light. They saw a slow swirl of white vaporous dust, forming a long sweeping curve that dissected the main half of the black mass, cutting through the center. The black mass was not solid. It gave the impression of being utterly empty, and yet sprinkled with myriad infinitesimal sparks shining and glowing within it. It was the effect of motion, as if each spark was moving, and as if the central spiral mass was slowly revolving, each glittering facet of it alive and fighting against the eye-hurting blackness, which Kane finally realized was not so much blackness as deep emptiness, a total lack of existence. Looking into it, they had the impression of gazing down into infinite depths of being, about to fall outward into unending space. The glittering points of light pained their eyes and tantalized them at the same time. They wanted to look away, and they were afraid that if they did, they would miss something wonderful. It was an entrancing masterpiece, but it was also subtly terrifying. After a couple of minutes of staring with unblinking eyes, Kane wrenched his gaze away, looking toward Sam, who smiled at him genially.
What is it? A singularity?
No. Nothing so prosaic as a black hole.
It's like looking into the universe. A miniature universe next door to our own.
Sam's smile widened.
It's like looking into the universe because it is, for all intents and purposes, the universe. It's the microcosm, a slice view of the universe compressed and condensed. We're looking at it through a dimensional window.
Sindri whirled, dumbfounded.
That's impossible!
No, it's an aperture into our universe, a portal through which all places and times are accessible. Come over here and see for yourself.
Tanvira and Kane turned toward the grouped banks of instruments. They recognized telescopes and spectroscopes tied into monitor screens. Also, there were several machines they weren't familiar with at all. Sam walked over to the nearest telescope, adjusted it on its tripod, then flicked a knob on a monitor screen. The image showed a field of stars, shining hard and bright. He turned the dials, and the view shifted steadily. Suddenly, a bright object sprang into view. It was a star, a brilliant burning disk of white, with the flaring arms of its corona shimmering around it.
Is that our sun?
Sol. We are looking at it from a dimension outside the space-time continuum.
Kane found himself almost too paralyzed to speak.
What uses will you put it to?
Sam shrugged as if the question were almost irrelevant.
This was an idea that arose from a conjunction of two laws of physics. The first has to do with the changes in the mass of a particle as it approaches the speed of light. Many pre-dark physicists determined that a moving object gained mass and lengthened in the direction of infinity as it approached the speed of light. Theoretically, at the speed of light, a particle would be of infinite mass and infinite length. In my work with the heart of the world, I determined this was indeed so. Definite measurements of particles that had been accelerated close to that speed showed a strong and rapidly rising increase in their mass, so much so that it seemed as if it would always be impossible to supply enough energy to bring the particle finally to its ultimate speed. The other factor that occurred to me was at first immaterial. This is almost the opposite end of the research spectrum. The idea of absolute zero in temperature. It is known that the temperature of an object is the product of the relative speed of its molecules. As a body heats up, its molecules are farther apart from each other and move faster. As it loses heat, they slow down and approach each other. At absolute zero, the molecules would lose all motion and come to a dead stop. Such a stop would presumably cause all the molecules to come together to form one mass without internal motion. This, too, seemed an unattainable outcome. Experiments had produced temperatures of only fractions above absolute, but again, the final zero could not be attained. It was my idea to combine both operations, to attempt to have a particle of matter reach both the speed of light and absolute zero simultaneously. It was a challenge, but I had plenty of time. I also had a hunch. One of those queer inspirations that come out of nowhere sometimes when you are consumed by a difficult problem, that by combining the molecular speed-up with ultra-low temperature physics, I might solve both. The addition of mass to a particle at near absolute zero might be the extra factor, and vice versa.
Sam gestured to the pool beneath the balcony.
For, as you see, there is this interesting quality about the speed of light and the absolute zero of temperature. Both are apparent boundaries of our universe. Both are part of the restraining walls of our particular continuum.
What happened?
Kane dreaded the answer.
The result of the experiment, the achievement of bringing a particle of matter to infinite mass and infinite length at absolute zero, was the creation of a state of existence that could not possibly exist in our universe. Do you understand that? Our universe cannot contain something of infinite length and mass, nor could a particle at absolute zero remain fixed in our perceptions of space or time. Therefore, the heart of the world became a true independent space-time unit, free from the constraints of our continuum, yet still connected.
Sam eyed Kane intently.
Now do you understand why I was concerned with your own temporal manipulations? I feared your blundering might cause chronon ripples that could impact negatively on my own ambitions.
What do you mean by ambitions, exactly?
Exactly? That would be difficult to describe. However, the entire principle of causality, that causes precede effects, would be toppled. There will be no more temporal paradoxes to contend with.
Sam nodded toward the computers.
I can enter the proper coordinates of a particular point in space or even time and inject whatever elements I choose from here. And now the great plan is no longer a plan, but has become the sole reality.
Tanvira gazed at Sam with something akin to adoration in her eyes.
That means you are truly the master of the universe, a god. No, not just a god, but God.
Give me a fucking break!
Sindri put his hands over his belly and mimed an attack of nausea.
How much of this ass-kissing frenzy are we expected to tolerate before we puke ourselves to death?
How dare you!
Teeth peeled back over her clenched teeth. Tanvira made a motion to kick Sindri in the head. He scuttled out of range, standing between a computer console and Kane. The smile Sam bestowed upon Sindri was so condescending, so insipid, that for an instant Kane wrestled with the insane urge to wipe it off his face with his fist. But despite the smile, Kane could tell Sindri's sarcasm had penetrated the Imperator's carapace of self-assurance. He began clicking the data cards in his hands nervously.
Even taking into account my half-sister's penchant for the theatrical, partly due to her upbringing by Lakesh and partly due to her devotion to me, you still can't deny my accomplishment deserves more of an acknowledgement than you have given it.
The accomplishment, perhaps, but the opinion that it elevates your status from some kind of hybrid mutie to a deity. No, I don't think so.
You are in no position to judge me, little man. What are you but a genetically engineered monstrosity, created to serve as a beast of burden? Oh, yes, I know all about you and your own petty ambitions to conquer and rule, but you never rose much above a common criminal. You haven't done a fraction of the things I've done. I've laid the groundwork for humanity's salvation. I've seen to the creation of a new life form.
Life form? Mr. Kane told me about the Pishchakas. In the pre-dark days, the poor and underprivileged served as cannon fodder. All you did was artificially raise cannon fodder. That doesn't meet my criteria of a new life form.
Tanvira made a hissing, spitting sound of fury and started toward Sindri. Sam restrained her and turned slightly toward the guard standing just outside the balcony. Instantly, the uniformed man stepped forward, hefting his SIG-AMT rifle.
By the time the great plan has been fully implemented, there will never be a need for cannon fodder again.
Why? Because everybody will be cannon fodder? Those that survive the plague, that is?
Sam's golden eyes narrowed to suspicious slits.
Dad told him.
Oh.
Sam shook his turbaned head with what seemed to be exasperated fondness.
That old dear. I allowed him to experience his youth again as his mental capacities diminished, but all he's done with it is to jabber.
And what's your reason for allowing me to experience the same thing?
Isn't it obvious? I gave you a very minor demonstration of what might be yours if you rejoin the world, Kane.
You mean rejoin you?
You never did join me. You always acted on your own, following an individual agenda, even when we shared the same goal. Now, I'm asking you to help me advance my ideals and make my agenda your own. And to join Tanvira as well.
Tanvira avoided looking at Kane.
I made the offer. He refused.
I wasn't in the market. And even if you restore my hormones to the levels of when I was 17, I still won't be.
He smiled with mock ingenuousness at Tanvira.
It might be a damn difficult choice, but I was even more stubborn at 17 than I am now.
Sindri crossed his arms impatiently.
You didn't answer his question about the plague.
It's not quite the horrible genocidal act you might think it is. I merely borrowed a few lessons from history. When a disease ravages a society, economics shatter, poverty moves in, and trust in governments and fellow human beings dissolves.
Not to mention new messiahs and messengers from God emerge from the chaos, especially if some kind of religious prophecies were apparently fulfilled during the plague times.
Sam gave him a fleeting, appreciative smile.
Exactly. In the Middle Ages, a century of progress was brought to a crashing halt by simultaneous outbreaks of the bubonic plague. When I inject my own virus into the various key points of time and place, I will effect changes just as major. But the new cost will be avoided, because the circumstances that led up to it will have been averted. There will be waste, of course, and that is to be deplored. But the plague victims will be mostly from the underclass of the stricken societies, those who contribute the least.
The useless eaters. That old saw.
But I want you, Kane, to be part of the great plan, especially as it moves into its final phase. If you are my ally, the temporal ripple backlash will be minimized. I will give you whatever you want. Just name it.
Kane forced a contemptuous smirk to his face.
Can you give me back Brigid?
Sam's smile faltered.
What I want is not within your power. And even if you tried to convince me that it was, all you'd ever do is hold the possibility of returning her to me over my head, like a sword.
Then what can I do for you?
Kane shrugged.
There are some questions you can answer, suspicions I've harbored for many years that you can confirm or deny. I'd like to find out why you financed the Naroda movement. What the significance of the entire Scorpia Prime alter ego and tantric sex deal was all about.
Sam opened his mouth as if to reply, but Kane held up a hand.
But as much as I'd like to know those things, The fate of human civilization, maybe even all of humanity, rests with me. That's not something I ever bargained for, but I've come to accept it, and I'll do what I can.
With that, Kane moved with a blinding speed and the controlled explosion of near superhuman reflexes that had been his as a younger man. He hurled himself forward, shoulder rolling between Tanvira and Sam. He caught a fragmented glimpse of fearful desperation on the face of the soldier when he realized he was Kane's objective. He tried to bring his auto rifle to bear, but Kane rose smoothly to his feet right in front of him, and the edge of his left hand lashed out, catching the man full across the neck. There was a mushy snap, as of a wet stick breaking, and the red and black garbed trooper dropped dead after uttering only one choked cry. Kane tried to wrestle the subgun out of the man's hands as he sagged, but they had reflexively tightened around it, and he had no time to wrest it from his grip. He caught a blur of movement from behind him. Tanvira launched an expert kick at his back. He twisted aside, taking the impact on his hip. Pain shivered through him, but if her foot had struck solidly where it had been aimed, the impact could have cracked his spine. Kane kept twisting, reaching out for the astonished Sam, putting his body between him and Tanvira. She had started to launch another kick and checked the movement, shrieking in frustration. She stumbled, and Sindri chose that moment to cannonball his small body into her legs. She fell heavily, and Sindri leaped atop her. Kane knew from painful experience that Sindri was far stronger than he looked. Sam tried to contort himself out of Kane's grasp, twisting and turning wildly. Kane turned with him, locking the man's left arm under his right and heaving up on it. Sam's lips writhed over his teeth in a grimace of pain. His nerve-numbed fingers opened and dropped the data cards. Kane caught them, snatching them out of the air. Maintaining the pressure on the captured arm, he forced the Imperator down on the floor grill.
Stay there, Messiah.
To show he meant business, he drove his knee into Sam's pointed chin, slamming him hard against the metal floor plates. He whirled toward the computer consoles, noting as he did so that Tanvira and Sindri were locked in thrashing, cursing combat. He swept his eyes across the machines and saw with a surge of relief that they were all networked. Swiftly, he inserted the cards in the proper ports, praying they could be read. Within a few seconds, which felt like a chain of interlocking eternities to Kane, symbols indicating the cards had been successfully uploaded flashed on the monitor screens. Kane then began inputting the spatiotemporal injection coordinates into the keyboards. Even he was amazed by how swiftly and surely he moved.
Sindri, get over here!
A hand suddenly closed around Kane's shoulder from behind. Fingers dug in deep, seeming to puncture flesh, muscle, and bone. He was too engulfed by the pain even to cry out. Then a force hauled him violently away from the keyboard. He saw Sindri lying on his face, breathing hard, with Tanvira kneeling on his back, holding both of his arms in hammerlocks. And he saw Sam the Imperator saunter toward him, carrying himself with a completely confident manner of a lion approaching its prey.
You are such a fool. I was your salvation, your only hope, and you threw it all away.
Sam shook his head in pity.
All away.
Kane leaped at Sam in a dropkick, throwing all of his weight against the tall, slender man. But he merely took two stumbling steps back while Kane fell heavily on his back. Before he could rise, Sam sidled in and caught hold of the back of his neck and squeezed. Kane choked off a scream of agony. The sensation was like being trapped between the jaws of a hydraulic bear trap. He tried but failed to pry Sam's fingers apart. Then he pistoned his fists into Sam's midsection as the Imperator lifted him clear of the balcony's floor and twisted him around so they were face to face.
You want to know why you were really implanted with the squid?
The pupils of his eyes suddenly sparked with a familiar crimson glow, like pinpoints of fire. Agony overtook Kane. He screamed in mindless pain and fury. Forgetting Sindri, even Tanvira, he bellowed an animal wail of rage and pain, cursing the hot coals that seemed to fill the inside of his skull. He was unable to form words or even think a single cogent thought. Sam released him, and Kane fell limply to the floor, writhing and twitching feebly. The Imperator towed him over onto his back, and Kane gazed up at him blankly, his nervous system overwhelmed. Sam reached up and pulled off his turban, revealing a naked cranium peeled of flesh, the skull bone open to the air. Sprouting from it were a series of tiny electrodes, studding it in an orderly pattern. Between the electrodes stretched flat ribbons of circuitry.
That's why you were implanted, Kane, just like everyone will be one day. So we will be unified, and I never need be alone again. No one will ever be alone again. All the units, the human brains in the world, will be linked to me. Chains enabling my mind to take over that of another, to influence, to guide, to control in almost total assimilation.
The pain in his head ebbed sufficiently so Kane could move and think again.
That's a very old dream.
Yes, many others attempted what I have, but they never completely realized their dream of an orderly world, a controlled and unified universe. Until now.
Kane managed to shamble to a half-crouch. Sam negligently drove a knee into his face. He heard and felt his nose cartilage collapse under the impact, and he fell over on his side. The pain was nothing compared to what he had experienced from the squid.
Time will expand my horizons and build on the accomplishments of my predecessors.
Kane slowly tried to climb to his knees again.
Predecessors?
Sam grinned, a very human grin, made horrific and macabre by his fleshless cranial bone.
Surely you figured it out by now, Kane. Remember what I told you a long, long time ago, in another place altogether.
Kane wiped at the blood threading his face and tottered erect. He knew now who Sam really was. The Imperator had confirmed suspicions he had secretly harbored, but dared not even consciously examine for many years.
I remember. You said that you're a program, not an individual entity.
Sam started to nod, then cried out more in shock than pain when Sindri struck him from behind with the truncheon taken from the guard's body. He had performed a truly prodigious leap in order to do it. Sparks flew in a shower from the top of Sam's head. Sam staggered forward, directly into Kane's left fist. He glimpsed Tanvira grabbing Sindri and hauling him down to the floor. Then a fountain of scorching rage erupted out of Kane. He moved to the attack, raining blow after blow on the Imperator's face, trying to pulverize it, turn it into a bloody mass of pulped flesh. The Imperator didn't bleed, and Kane hadn't really expected him to, although his pounding fists lacerated the prominent cheekbones and knocked out a couple of teeth. Kane kept up the battering, driving his fists into Sam's body, then his face again, in a flurry of hooks, right and left crosses, and uppercuts. He was encouraged by the lack of neuronic energy pouring into his brain from the squid. Sindri had apparently knocked something askew, and Kane wasn't about to allow the Imperator the opportunity to repair it. Sam suddenly swung a fist from the hip, driving a blow into Kane's left side. The cracking of bone was audible, and sharp razors of pain slashed through Kane's torso. He doubled over, jackknifing around the fist. The blow had been too swift, delivered with unerring accuracy and precision. Kane understood dimly that Sam had been learning while he was being pummeled. He had processed all the finer points of hand-to-hand combat. He knew exactly where to strike. Kane lay doubled up around where the blow had landed, his eyes clouded with tears of pain. He panted through his open mouth, tasting blood. He waited for Sam to reach down and crush his larynx or kick him to death. Neither happened. The Imperator walked right past him and bumped against the rail. Kane gaped at him as Sam extended his arms and waved them through the air.
I can't see! Tanvira, I can't see!
Kane almost laughed. The blow Sindri had landed on his squid network had damaged the optic nerve feed to his eyes. The Imperator was blind. Tanvira shrieked in horror and tried to hurl Sindri away from her, but he held on by double handfuls of her hair. Kane forced himself to his feet, ignoring the grate of bone in his side. He lashed out with a straight leg kick, catching Sam in the center of the back. Vertebrae crunched under the impact, but Sam didn't scream or plummet over the rail. Instead, his mouth opened, but no sound came out. He jerked and fell, long limbs thrashing uncontrollably, like a puppet whose strings had been cut. Kane guessed his entire network of neuronic energy was disrupted, but not necessarily permanently. He leaned against the rail to ease the pain of his shattered ribs.
Let her go, Sindri. Time for us to implement the last phase of our own great plan.
Snarling, Sindri punched Tanvira in the side of the head before letting her go. She flopped onto her back, arms and legs asprawl. Sindri staggered over to him.
You've uploaded the data cards?
Kane nodded.
So you knew that's what I was going to do?
Sindri winced as he touched the welt swelling on the side of his face.
It was pretty damn obvious. I did everything I could to piss Sam off and to make him careless.
You did a fine job.
You might say it's a calling, Mr. Kane.
How well I know that.
Kane forced a smile to his face. From the pocket of his bodysuit, he withdrew the CD and handed it to Sindri.
Here you go. People's Exhibit A.
And I guess I'm Exhibit B, providing I get to where you want me to go.
Sindri moved along the rail in the direction of the computers, peering over the side into the pool.
How do you figure to inject me into the past?
The simplest way is to...
Kane's words were drowned out by the stuttering report of the SIG AMT. The recoil made her upper body shake violently. Kane lunged forward, kicking himself off the balcony floor, the roar of the subgun a thundering drum roll in his ears. He saw bullets smash into the computer console, gouging through the plastic keyboards and tearing scars in the metal. He felt two sledgehammer blows against his back, which hurled him forward. He slammed into Sindri. The little man toppled over the balcony rail, but he clung to Kane's hand and held it tightly for a long, agonizing moment. Sindri stared up uncomprehendingly into his face. Kane opened his mouth to speak, and blood vomited from his lips. Kane summoned all the energy left in his broken body from toe tip to the crown of his head.
When you get there, tell him... tell me who the Imperator really is. He's...
Tundera hurled herself onto Kane, pounding hysterically at his back with the butt of the auto rifle. Kane's hand opened, and Sindri plunged down into the maw of the universe. When he struck the pool, the microcosm of infinity, a cloud of star sparks shot up like a stream of embers cast from a burning log. Then he was gone. Kane hitched around and pushed Tanvira away from him. She sat down hard on the floor, then crawled over to the spasming body of Sam. She cradled him in her arms, but he did not speak. His eyes were vacant, his gape-mouthed face a blank. Tanvira buried her face in her hands, sobbing as if her heart would break. Kane hoped it would. Gritting his teeth, he tried to make himself comfortable, but he knew that was an impossibility. He ruefully eyed the raw, pulsing exit wounds on his chest. They were bleeding profusely, and he thought he saw bits of lung tissue mixed in with the scarlet flow, but he figured he would recover. He always did. Then he chuckled at the absurd way his mind was constructed. It didn't seem capable of accepting death or defeat, even in the face of utter and complete finality. As darkness crept in on the edges of his vision, he wondered how long he would be dead. Only time will tell, he thought. Cerberus Redoubt. In the anteroom, a droning hum arose from the gateway chamber. Both Bry and Lakesh jumped in surprise. Brigid, seated at the main ops console, spun her chair away from the keyboard and stared at the armaglass-enclosed unit.
Is it a true matter stream carrier or another quantum fluctuation like what happened the other day?
We've definitely got a matter stream, Lakesh. Coming into full phase.
How can that be?
For a long moment, Lakesh didn't answer. He only shook his head in confusion.
We've definitely got a materialization.
Brigid stared at the flares of energy on the other side of the brown armor glass.
Lakesh, you'd better get an armed detail in here.
Armed security detail to operations. Stat!
The electronic wail from the jump chamber faded, dropping down to silence. The bursts of energy behind the translucent slabs disappeared. Within a minute, Kane rushed into the complex, wielding a nickel-plated Mustang 30.
We've got an unauthorized jumper!
It's happened before, hasn't it?
Yes, and it's never been a friendly visit from anyone either.
Domi rushed in, double-fisting her .45-caliber Detonics Combat Master. The small albino girl followed Kane's hand signals and took up position on the left side of the jump chamber. Reba DeFore hustled in, looking both frightened and annoyed. Instead of a gun, she carried a medical kit. She hung back in the operations room, watching as Kane and Domi took up crossfire positions on either side of the MATTRANS unit, weapons held at hip level. Brigid stepped up to the platform and gripped the door handle.
No matter who or what is in there, don't shoot until I give you the go-ahead. It's all right, I think.
Kane peered around the open door and stared in disbelief for a long second.
Sindri!
He dragged in a great, shuddery breath as if his lungs had been deprived of oxygen for a long time. His glassy eyes asked a silent, beseeching question.
You're in Cerberus. I'm assuming it's where you meant to end up.
Kane stepped in and pulled him up to a sitting position by the collar of his shadow suit.
How the hell did you get here, pissant?
Mr. Kane, Miss Brigid... You probably won't believe this, but I'm overjoyed to see both of you again.
And why is that? Friend Kane and dearest Brigid told me you had the most ghastly fates for them in mind during your last meeting.
yesterday's news. And I mean that in the most literal way possible.
He started to reach into a pocket, but Domi snapped her gun barrel up and he subsided.
Surely, none of you think I can conceal a weapon in this outfit.
I think if anybody could, you'd be the one. Move slow.
Sindri did as he said, sliding out the slip-sleeved compact disc. Lakesh made a move to take it, but Sindri snatched it away.
No. I have been charged to give this to Mr. Kane, and Mr. Kane only.
Brigid arched a questioning eyebrow.
Charged by whom?
That Mr. Kane will find out after he reviews its contents.
Kane gazed at the disc distrustfully, as if he half suspected it was really a radioactive isotope. Gingerly, he took it. DeFore stepped forward, eyeing Sindri clinically.
I should get you to the infirmary and treat that wound.
No need. This blood isn't mine.
Domi frowned.
Who does it belong to, then?
Sindri wiped a bit from his face and looked at it shining on his gloved fingertips.
I believe if you test it, you'll find it belongs to Mr. Kane.
Kane's jaw muscles knotted in angry frustration, and he took a threatening step toward Sindri.
I've had enough of this. Tell us how you got here, Sindri, and from where, or I'll do what Grant said he'd do the last time we were in each other's company.
Sindri's brow furrowed as if he were dredging up a memory.
Oh, right. Rip my arms off and hammer them down my throat. Where is the truculent Mr. Grant, anyway?
He is away at present. I suggest you comply with friend Kane's request.
Very well. It's worth being pushed around just to see the looks on your faces. I came to be here through the venue of a spatial and temporal dimensional window, cutting across the continuum through a microcosmic pathway. It was put together by someone you know. He calls himself the Imperator.
He paused, apparently enjoying the surprise flickering in all of their eyes.
However, you know him best by his nom de voyage, the name he travels under, Colonel C.W. Thrush.
No one spoke or moved or even appeared to breathe for a long, silent moment. Sindri made shooing motions with his hands.
Off with you, Mr. Kane. Time for you to find out what the future holds and how you can get the hell out of the arrangement.
Abruptly, all the humor in Sindri's voice, eyes, and manner disappeared.
And believe me, all of you have a very long way to go.
The loyalties that united the Cerberus warriors have come undone as a bizarre messenger from the future provides a look into encroaching horror and death. Kane and his band have one option: fix two fatal fault lines in the time continuum and rewrite history before it happens. But first, they must restore power to the Barons, who dare to defy the greater evil, the mysterious new Imperator. Then they must wage war in the jungles of India, where the deadly, beautiful Scorpia Prime and her horrifying bioweapon are about to decimate the world. Outlanders 26, Sea of Plague. Outlanders Talon and Fang is a Graphic Audio production. Outlanders and all characters are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2003, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, and Kate Torrey. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Nathaniel Perry and Nathan DeBoard. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan and Brian Rogers. The Outlanders theme was composed by Norman Vandersleis. Additional original music by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Outlanders, be sure to look for James Axler's Deathlands, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another graphic audio title.
From Deathlands 65, Hellbenders.
By the three Kennedys.
The old man lay a few feet from the giant wormhole, gathering his thoughts and regaining what breath he could. Dean was on his haunches, breathing heavily, while Jack still lay face down, frozen in attention to the rumbling, which grew louder by the second. The others were also transfixed as they listened.
What is that?
Muty Worm, we disturbed Burrow, made fear danger.
So it's coming to investigate? Why didn't the stoop fucker just run away, like any other intelligent, dumb creature would?
Disregarding the inherent contradiction, I would say that was a pointless question. Better just to get the hell away from here ourselves.
Doc's right. That thing's gonna make a bigger hole when it comes out than when it went in. And it has all that disturbed cast to push out of the way.
Great. A worm shit shower.
Shut up and run!
They were all on their feet now and running toward their original path, bringing them back on course for Charity and away from the giant cast.
How do we know that this isn't where the worm is going to surface and we're running right into it?
Because they're more...
Fuck!
The worm exploded to the surface, throwing dry desert earth into the air and showering them with dust and hard-packed earth. They all hit the ground. Damper soil soon rained down, the cast from the tunnel.
Hot pipe, watch out!
Dean writhed around, trying to avoid the raining soil. A large clump of damp soil hit the ground where Dean had lain but a moment before, leaving an impact crater where his head would have been. The others were trying to judge where the larger clumps would fall as they wriggled around on the ground. There was no time to get up and run. By the time the dirt rain had finally ceased, the disturbed, muty worm had come straight up from the hole and was now towering above, perpendicular to the sand and awesome in length. At a glance, Dean judged it to be about 50 feet long, the tail end disappearing into the hole. It undulated in a rippling motion, the manner in which it was able to keep its segmented body upright. The front segment moved around as if trying to detect the wreck party. Its mouth howled open, the strange rows of fleshy teeth dripping ooze.
Oh, fuck!
Doc snapped out of his stupor, and with remarkable swiftness, reached across to Mick, who was carrying a supply bag, and took it from him.
Hey!
Mick was in charge of carrying spare ammo, grens, and Plasex. Doc picked out a gren. He also took a lump of Plasex and hastily wrapped it around the gren. Scrambling to his feet, Tanner launched himself toward the monster Muty. Somehow, the creature detected Doc's presence. Its head tilted, its monstrous teeth working like a steam shovel.
Get thee hence!
Doc pulled the pin, drew back his arm, and threw the explosive toward the open mouth. The head section lifted slightly as it detected the motion of the gren, moving with the arc of the small object, and the mouth welcomed it in.
Duck and cover!
Everyone threw themselves onto the desert floor and covered their heads. 1 second, the worm seemed to be rearing up in all its awesome glory, and the next, it had simply vaporized.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.